Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I am celebrating, as I do every year, with Dr. Gregory Freeland, Martin Luther King, Santa Barbara, weekend of events, January 16th through January 2025. All events free. All are welcome. And we have a really cool happening on the show today. I have young poets, awardees of the annual prize. And I want to start the program by reading a poem by Tacunda Chikawero, who is in fifth grade at Isla Vista Elementary, an awardee also of the competition. And the poem is called Thriving Like Nature. If nature can coexist, why not us? Animals consume fruit, energy and strength they get. Up in the mountains they walk, eating fruit as they go, spreading the seeds everywhere. More trees sprouting every place. Within the valleys, near the gullies, all over the rich, dark, white, brown, and red dirt, more trees flourish. All over, trees scatter, nature thrives. If nature can coexist, why not us? Bees buzzing, working together, flowers they pollinate, nectar they collect, honey they make, balanced the ecosystem becomes. If bees can work together, if bees can plant, help plants blossom, why not us? Like nature, we too can coexist. Like bees, we too can work together. Like animals, we too can spread seeds. Ah, we too can spread love and uplift one another. In Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s words, we can all get more together than we can apart, and this is the way we gain power. Power to serve our planet, nations, communities, power to sustain a more promising future for my generation. If nature can coexist, if bees can work together, if animals can spread seeds, why not us? That is a poem by Tacunda, and Tacunda is with us today. And Tacunda, what was your inspiration for this beautiful poem?
Wow. The fact that some humans were known to mistreat each other and treat each other inhumanely just makes me sad.
Okay, that's well put. And I want to also introduce to the show Louisa Martinez, who's an eighth grader at Riviera Ridge School. And her poem, MLK was a great man. Martin Luther King Jr. was a great man who did great things, fighting to break the walls between blacks, whites, and browns, standing up against racism when no one else had the courage or strength to do so. He made our world better, safer for everyone. Even though he did so much for us, his biggest sacrifice was his life. He was assassinated by James Earl Ray on April 4th, 1968. Although he isn't here to finish his work, it's our job to complete it for him together. That's Louisa's poem. And Louisa, what was in your head when you created that?
If I'm being honest, I just wrote like from my heart and what I believe on what our generation can do today and how we can do. And like, there's so much good in the world and we just need to sparkle it in the world right now.
We need to what? Say that? We need to do what in the world right now? Did you say spark it?
We just need to highlight the goodness in the world and like stop hatred right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Fantastic. And I also want to introduce, every year I get to speak with Dr. Greg Freeland. He's the board president of the MLK Committee of Santa Barbara. He's on the faculty of Cal Lutheran University in the Department of Political Science. He's a director of the Global Studies Program and faculty advisor to Model United Nations. He teaches courses on social movements, American politics, Latin American, Caribbean politics and culture, and music and civil rights. He has led travel seminars to Jamaica and the Caribbean Studies Association and Western Political Science Association. He's the co-editor of the book International Environmental Justice, Competing Claims and Perspectives. And Dr. is, receiving grants from the National Endowments for the Humanities and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation Faculty Fellowship. He continues to do research on various interests in political science. He serves on Cal Lutheran's President's Diversity Council, Student Life Committee, and Honors Committee. He's the president of the Central Coast Alliance United for Sustainable Economic Growth. He received a Lifetime Achievement Award from CAUSE in recognition of outstanding and invaluable service to the community in April of 2017. And I wonder, Dr. Freeland, if you could talk a little bit about some of the events happening. I know we have, starting January 16th, at the University of California, Santa Barbara, an eternal flame lighting that kicks off the events. And I wonder if you could take us from there.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for that intro, but I sent you a brief bio. That was a little long one there. But,
well, you're pretty impressive, so I thought I'd read it all.
Yeah, Joe. So on January 16th, at UCSB, we're going to have a ceremony around the Eternal Flame. We do this every year. And the Eternal Flame was created really, in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. and the two Kennedys who were also assassinated. And they each have quotes around this Eternal Flame, which is intended to go all the time out there. This event will be from 12 to 2, and there will be involvement with UCSB students as well, because it's a combination of a remembrance as well as a honor to Martin Luther King's remembrance of when the Black students took over North Hall at that demand they have the Black Studies curriculum. This is in 1968. So after the ceremony, we would march by North Hall in a silent march to Multicultural Center there, where we have another program as well as a luncheon. This lasts from 12 to 3 on Thursday, January 16th. The next day, on January 17th, we have a congregation with a Nye Birth service, which would be a student reading of their essay and portrait program. The younger students will be there reading this. On January 18th, Saturday, there's a Community Environmental Council showing of a film called Raging Waters, and there will be a panel discussion afterwards. Now, this came about with us because we did a survey in the local Black churches here to find out how their congregation felt about environmental awareness and environmental sustainability issues. And we found out that one of the things that they were concerned about was flooding. Many of them live over there on the Lower East Side, and during big rainstorms, and we do need one right now, but maybe not a big major one, certainly. It floods over there. The last one, it flooded some of their houses, and they felt that they were unaware of this. So this panel discussion, we'll talk about what can be done, what has been done, a little bit of history. That documentary, Raging Waters, that will be shown, is about flooding all over the world. But there is a segment there on the mud debris flood that happened in Montecito as well. On January 19th, which is Sunday, we just sort of asked the churches, to worship and announce the events, which will happen the very next day. So we just urge individuals to go to the church of their choice, church, synagogue, mosque, wherever you worship, and sort of mention and honor Martin Luther King Jr. On the final day, January 20th, which is our major event, we began a morning ceremony in Delaguerre Plaza at 9 a.m. Where we have programs, the mayor will speak, a couple of politicians, local elected politicians will also speak. We will have dancing and singing out there in this park. There were lessons about 9:55, at which time we would march up State Street, you know, just walk up there slowly. We call it a unity march. We'll march up State Street at 10, and we arrive at the Arlington Theater. And people would go in and gather and get ready for our programming that would happen there. And this would last till about almost 11 o'clock, 10:40, 10:45, and so on. At which time we would move over to a church over on Garden and Anacap, I believe it is. You'll see the announcement, where we would have a final luncheon to mark the end of the weekend of Martin Luther King events.
Excellent. Excellent. And you know what's so interesting is the Community Environmental Council talk and the you know, your poll of Black churches that said people are concerned about floods, natural disasters, and here we are, you know, looking at what's going on in Los Angeles and Calabasas and Altadena and Pasadena. It's just nuts. And so I'm so glad that you're putting a spotlight on environmental concerns this year. Super important. And later in this program, we're going to be introducing a keynote speaker, Lisa Sedaris, professor of environmental studies at UC Santa Barbara, who will actually be calling in at the half hour. And I'll introduce her at that time. But yeah, thank you for the rundown, Dr. Freeland. And I want Tukunda, to tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me about your family. Tell me about what your interests are, Tukunda. I want to know a little bit more about you.
Wow. First of all, the reason I got into writing poems is because my older sister would write poems and recite them at theaters, and I wanted to follow in her footsteps.
All right. And so your older sister is a poet, and she's how much older than you?
She's like 22 older. She's like 22 years old.
Oh, she's quite a bit older than you.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you grow up here in Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
And what's your favorite thing to study?
Usually history.
Why?
A lot of history because I'm interested in what happened in the past and before the present.
Fantastic. And do you know a profession that you'd like to follow?
Maybe I'd like to be a historian because my dad is a historian who studies African history.
How interesting. That's fantastic. And Louisa, tell me about your background.
Hi. My dad's a fireman, so I'm wishing for all the firemen the best for the LA fire.
Oh, yes, yes, there. Yes.
My mom's a nurse for a cottage, so I've always kind of grown up for helping one another and wishing everyone the best and trying to just be there for everyone, and because we're a whole community. And I was born and raised here in Santa Barbara, very lucky and like grateful for that. And it's my last year at Riviera Ridge, and it's bittersweet because I've been here since kindergarten and I love all my teachers, and I'm just hoping for the best for everyone.
And where will you go next year?
I'm applying to K or DP Engineer Academy. I'm hoping for the best, but whatever life takes me, I'm sure it will do the best for me. Yeah.
That's fantastic. You are a philosopher. I can hear yes in what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. And what do you like to study?
I love art, all forms of art. I've always been like that since I was little. And I am at art honors for my third year. And I just love writing, drawing, painting, all forms of it. It's just always been such my flow and therapy in a way.
That's your therapy.
Yeah, it has been, because I feel like I can express myself without any judgment, and it really carries my emotions, happy, anger, like whatever I feel.
You know, you mentioned when we were talking about your essay, MLK was a great man. You mentioned that it was important for your generation to help complete his work. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree totally. But what I'm interested to know, because I can remember myself in eighth grade, and you're in eighth grade at Riviera Ridge. What do you think is different about your generation? What distinguishes your generation, do you think, Louisa?
I feel because our generation is rising, and we are the ones that are going to do all the jobs and going to grow up and have families and all that. And for us to teach our children and the next generation is a big importance for everyone to like keep the peace and love keep going and just spread it all over the world.
And what about you, Tukunda? What do you think is different? Now, you're in fifth grade, but what do you think is different about your generation, for example, from Dr. Freeland's and my generation? What do you think?
Well, I think our generation might struggle a little bit with the world, because there's been many generations before them that have done awful things in the world.
Okay, I see. Dr. Freeland, I'm going to ask you the same question. What do you think about this generation coming?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I think they're a little smart, because they have access to a lot more than we had. All of this social media, all this access to computers, all these kind of things that we had. Yeah, we watched television with three channels, and basically we had to go out and seek out all the information. So I think they're a little bit more aware of what's going on. And I think when they get grown, they are going to be good citizens, more informed citizens. They just have to know how to process all of those interests that are coming their way. All of that social media is flowing in their direction.
Well said, yeah. So I guess it's a blessing and a curse both to be so ultra aware of everything. We were blissfully not besieged every day with social media growing up. I know, Dr. Freeland, what you're talking about. And Richard's giving us a sign we got to go to quick break. So we're going to go for a commercial break. And I just want to reintroduce this show is in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. Committee of Santa Barbara. And what's so interesting is the theme this year. I was really, really excited to hear. The theme is around a quote by Dr. King, which is, "Everyone has the power for greatness, not for fame, because greatness is determined by service." And this was from a speech in April of 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. We also will talk a little bit about the mission of the committee. Well, the mission is to foster positive relationships between the many diverse groups in Santa Barbara community and sponsor programs and events which exemplify the teaching of Dr. King and to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. If you are interested in making a donation, you can actually do that, and it will help support the legacy of Martin Luther King. Take a look online at MLKSB, and you can find a link there for a donation. Okay, don't turn that down, but back in a minute, talking about the events beginning January 16th to celebrate the Dr. Martin Luther King holiday. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're celebrating Martin Luther King Santa Barbara series of events, which happen every year, celebrating the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The events begin on January 16th, and we also have a special guest that's coming into our program, and I want to introduce the keynote speaker for the event. And let's see, we have Lisa coming in, don't we? Yeah, there she is. Hello, Lisa.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning. So Lisa Sedaris is a professor of environmental studies at UC Santa Barbara. Before coming to UC Santa Barbara, she taught in the religious studies department at Indiana University in the Faculty of Religion. Then she was also at the McGill University in Montreal, in environmental studies and the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Pace University in New York City. She teaches a variety of courses in environmental ethics, science and religion, and nature and spirituality, as well as courses focused on the emerging ethical issues of the Anthropocene. She's an ethics, ecological theology, and natural selection, consecrating science and wonder knowledge in the natural world, a book and co-editor of a collection of interdisciplinary essays. And really interesting, the combination of her background, the ethical significance of natural processes, and the way in which environmental values are captured and obscured by narratives. My goodness, I was reading this last night and I was thinking, we really need to talk to you because of what's happening down south.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the destruction and the despair happening because the environment is, you know, reacting to us.
Yes.
I read also in your background about contemporary scientific discourse and its impact on how humans conceive of and relate to nature. And then I'm thinking also, Dr. Sedaris, of you know, the kind of the glories and the threat of artificial intelligence in relation to our present moment in history. I know you're especially
converging all at once on us at this moment, it seems.
Yeah, right. Say that again.
There are a lot of different forces from, you know, our interactions with the natural world that are now beginning to become more obvious, and forces from technology and science. So there's a lot going on right now that requires us to sort of think very seriously about what it means to be a human being at the center of these forces that we ourselves have in some sense created.
So what's interesting to me is, you know, looking at your background, is the convergence of ethics and religion, and also, you know, your interest in scientific processes. And I'm really interested to hear more about this idea that narratives can both influence and divert.
Right.
And what's interesting to me is, you know, we're talking to two young, we've got an eighth grader and a fifth grader who are awardees of the contest of great essay and poetry writing, and the narratives that they're creating and will create as they go forward in their lives. There seems to be like a theme today of the narrative, the importance of narrative. Of course, we've got Dr. Martin Luther King, great, great narrator, great communicator,
right,
that we're celebrating. Tell me more what you're thinking along those lines.
Well, so humans have inherited certain stories about who we are, which we get often from religion. Those can include things like creation stories, They can tell us that we're either at the center of the universe in some sense, or that we're the most important creatures in the universe, or that our responsibilities are to be caretakers and stewards and be in service to others, both human and non-human. We also get stories from science, which sometimes in the same way can either center the human by kind of looking at all the magnificent wonders that we've created through technology and science, or, you know, science can show us in some sense that we're a very small part of the universe. What we know about the modern universe tells us that it's very, very old, right? That humans are a very small part of it. That doesn't mean that we're insignificant altogether, but it kind of helps us think about what our proper place is in the universe. So one of the things that I'm very interested in my research and in my teaching as well is thinking about how to articulate stories about where we fit into nature and the universe that will be good both for us and for the universe. And I think that means probably telling lots of different stories, because different people come from different places and have their own experiences and stories. So there isn't going to be like any one story that everyone can sort of plug into. But I think we need sort of a multiplicity of different stories to share our experiences and think about how we can have unity without glossing over difference.
Interesting. And you mentioned that the various cultures have various myths around where human beings fit into the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea, it was really interesting on NPR today where Meghna Chakrabarty, who I love her programs, she was interviewing a gentleman who won a Nobel in, he was the godfather of AI. And she was saying, you know, if you gave AI a question, how could we cure climate deterioration? AI might answer, we'll just get rid of all humans. You know,
right?
And Louisa is shaking her head. Yes, Louisa, what do you think about that?
I feel like AI has a big toll on our future, but we have to remember that to stand our ground and that we are the ones that are in charge. And like, it also affects our writing. And I feel AI should not take in charge of what we take pride in, like writing, art, and all the fun stuff, but honestly do all the stuff that we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm kind of against AI writing and AI art.
Because it takes away the process, right? I mean, it's the whole process of making art, mm-hmm. of making literature, you yeah. know, it's,
yeah,
it's
putting the emotion
about the product, it's about the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes away the process, but it also, could it possibly, I don't know, Tukunda, what do you think about this? Do you think that Dr. Sedaris is saying is where do human beings fit into the environment is what she likes to think about, what she likes to study. And what she's saying is that the stories that we tell each other as humans through the ages have a real big role in determining what we do going forward. And I keep on thinking about your interest in becoming a historian. So what do you think as a historian about this question of how a story can influence us?
So there's a bunch of stories through history that people used when they couldn't explain anything. Like if something was different one day, if someone needed an explanation, they would make up a story for it and make themselves feel better about it because they don't know what it is.
A lot of religions, that's one way of understanding what creation myths are, is that they're what people call an etiology. It's like, as in with disease, you know, it's an explanation of something that you don't understand. And then, you know, like how did sin come into the world? Why is human nature the way that it is? Why do we feel sort of, if we do, kind of inclined to be selfish, to be egotistical, to have power, you know? And there are stories in all religions that try to explain things like that.
Yeah.
So
exactly what Martin Luther King talks about.
Yeah.
You know, this is really, you know, the theme for this year, I think, is very much about an analysis of human nature, what he's doing in that quote and in some of his sermons.
Well, the emphasis on service.
Yes. I mean, because that the line about fame and greatness and service comes in part from a speech, really a sermon that he gave, where he speaks about what he calls the drum major instinct. And the drum major instinct is, so the drum major's out front where everyone can see the drum major, the first one, you know, in the band. And that humans kind of collectively have this sort of instinct to put the self first, to seek attention. So it's sort of ego gratification. And so, you know, what he's saying there is that not that we eradicate this impulse, because it's so deeply embedded in us, we probably can't eradicate it, but instead we sort of try to harness it into the desire to be great, to turn that towards service towards others. And so that's distinct from fame, which is something that people, you know, seek all the time. I mean, if you look at social media and social influencers, right, it's all about bringing all the, having as many followers as you can. But having followers in the sense of being a great person like King was, is something very different. It's to achieve greatness through not feeding the ego, but serving others and being part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, in fact, he challenges us to redefine what it means to be great by placing this value on selflessness, compassion, and the positive impact that we have on others. He reminds us that greatness is not reserved for the famous or extraordinary, but is attainable by anyone who acts of service.
Right, regardless of your wealth or your education, or anyone can achieve greatness in that sense.
Exactly.
So what do you think about that, Louisa? Anybody can achieve greatness through service.
I totally agree. I feel like we're all meant to be here for a purpose, and we all have our path in the world, and we all have our greatness that's soon going to come.
We have our greatness. Say that again.
We all have our greatness that's soon going to come, or is going to come, like, right around the corner. Like, we all have our path in our world, and like, we're all meant to be here.
So, you know, what can you think about how your generation can influence the kind of tragedy that we're seeing in Los Angeles with all the fires? What can your generation do you think?
I feel there's nothing we can do to prevent natural disasters. But something we can do is to help one another if we can. Like, when people are struggling with their safety, like, we have to do our best to put ourselves in their shoes and help them get through that tough spot.
Yeah, it's. I was thinking about who I've got. When I was your age, I had a group of people that we were all young actors and actresses, thespians. We were in a group together, and that whole group has kind of remained in contact over many, many years. And a bunch of them are in the business, as they say, in Los Angeles. So they're in the entertainment business. We've been communicating with them throughout these couple of days, and I've invited a couple of them to come and be here in Santa Barbara, to just because five of them have lost their homes. It's nuts, Dr. Sedaris. It's what's happening there. What's the academic community thinking about this?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that was just mentioned about natural disasters, I mean, it is in a sense natural, but it's also made so much worse because of things like climate change and because of existing inequalities in the kind of, you know, access to services and things that people get both before and after a disaster. So, you know, in my own community, I think people are very concerned with making sure that everyone gets help in the situation, regardless of whether they're in a wealthy community or not, and that those kinds of, you know, services are distributed evenly. Also making sure that people understand that the causes of this disaster are in fact linked to climate change, and that they are in fact linked to environmental injustices that exist even prior to these disasters and that exacerbate these disasters, and that we not just start pointing the finger and blaming each other on other sides of the, you know, of the political divide, which is already what we see happening on the right.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah, that's, you know, what's interesting is we haven't met before, Dr. Sedaris, but I'm of 30 years an appraiser of art and antiques and personal property, and I work with a lot of families that, you know, as an expert witness in court for proceedings about fire and flood and mudslide related issues. And the impact, you know, it's very interesting because there's a very interesting communication, and it's just a it's what's going on right now. It's just really going to impact, I think, all of California.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's your talk. Oh, Richard's giving us time. We got to go to quick break, but I want to hear a little bit about the theme of your talk to happen. When we get back from the break, don't turn that down. Back in a minute, I'm talking with a really interesting group of people. Dr. Freeland is here. Dr. Sedaris is here. She's keynote speaker for Martin Luther King Jr. event. And then I have two young writers, poets, historians, thinkers, philosophers. Tukunda and Louisa are here, fifth grade and eighth grade, awardees of the contest of the writing, the narrative part of the program. They will be speaking also and reciting their poetry very soon. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's super interesting. So we've got the kind of confluence of thoughts coming together on this program. We're celebrating Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday along with Martin Luther King Jr.'s Santa Barbara committee that has done a beautiful job of, well, from January 16th to January 20th, all kinds of events happening. We have with us Lisa Sedaris, Dr. Lisa Sedaris, who has a really interesting background in both environmental concerns and religious studies, and the joining together of the idea of the two ideas, one about science and one about faith. And I can't help but think that this is the perfect time for this kind of thought. You know, we see the disaster happening. We had our share of it here in Santa Barbara, and Los Angeles now has their share of it. And I'm wondering what Dr. Sedaris will be speaking about. She's the keynote speaker for this year's celebration. Can you, without spoiling your speech for us,
yeah,
give us a little, yeah. Give us a taste.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I mentioned a few moments ago the idea that King talks about service as being something that you experience something larger than yourself, that you be part of something bigger than yourself. And this is a way of kind of subduing our egotistical impulses. And so the greatness lies in humility. And a lot of my work, you mentioned Rachel Carson, I've been very engaged in writing about Rachel Carson, who was one of the founders of the environmental movement, really the pioneer. In 1962, she published Silent Spring. And there's a lot of parallels, and really not just parallels, but intersections between the civil rights movement of the 60s and the environmental movement. But one of the key concepts, I think, between Rachel Carson and Martin Luther King Jr. was the idea of wonder and humility, you know, that in this kind of, the reality is comprised of sort of interlacing relationships, interdependence, interconnection in human communities, in nature, in the universe, and that, you know, this kind of instinct that we have to put ourselves above others or to exclude others works against the kind of solidarity and interconnectedness that really is the structure of the universe itself. So they both spoke about wonder in this way, as having wonder at that interconnectedness, that reality that brings us all together, and seeking unity against this kind of egotistical impulse that would pull us apart and create hierarchies of who counts more than others. So I see a lot of similarities between those two, you know, great leaders from the 1960s who surely, if they never spoke, were at least influenced by one another's work.
This idea of wonder, I wanted to know, Tukunda, what do you think about that? Because, you know, your poem, I don't know if Dr. Sedaris has read your poem, but your poem talks, well, Dr. Sedaris, Tukunda's poem is entitled Thriving Like Nature. And the first sentence of the poem is, or first stanza, I should say, if nature can coexist, why not us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the final line, of course, stanza, if nature can coexist, if bees can work together, if animals can spread seeds. And he uses the idea of seeds as a metaphor, you know, spreading seeds, in other words, doing good service and sprouting, you know, sprouting other people to do good service too. If animals can spread seeds, why not us? So, Tukunda, what do you think about this idea about what Dr. Sedaris is saying, is that there's a sort of a sense in your poem of, you know, enjoying, looking, being enthralled with and wonder of the natural world. What do you think about that?
Wow. I compare nature in my poem to how people and people, how other people treat each other and view each other. Like they should, other people should view each other how nature views each other.
What do you think about that, Louisa?
I agree. I feel that we are part of nature and we need to learn more about it to make our society better. There's a lot that nature does that we can take for our society.
As beautifully said, you know, there's a, Dr. Sedaris, there's a line in Tukunda. Now, keep in mind, Tukunda is a fifth grader. Listen to this stanza. Within the valleys, near the gullies, all over the rich, dark, white, brown, and red dirt, more trees flourish. All over, trees scatter. Nature thrives. If nature can coexist, why not us?
Mm-hmm.
I love that the dirt is all different colors.
So it's the diversity, the interconnectedness, the interdependence of nature. Yeah. So connected but different and thriving.
Yeah, Tukunda, that's very beautiful that I don't, sometimes when you write something like that, are you thinking about, oh, let me make the dirt different colors to emphasize the fact that not all of us are the same color?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty beautiful. And I just want to give another shout out. Dr. Freeland is with us. And Dr. Freeland, how many how many celebrations have you been part of now?
The MLK celebrations or just celebrations in general? I've certainly been part of the Martin Luther King celebrations for since the beginning, you know, back in 2008. But I believe celebrations are very good for community. Celebratory things bring people together, make people feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this event does that as well.
Well, just another shout out to the events happening. We're starting on January 16th at the University of California, Santa Barbara with the Eternal Flame. Then we've got a student awardee reading, which we've got two students here. January 17th, the students will be reading their poems and essays. January 18th, the Community Environmental Council on State Street, which is a beautiful little, actually large community gathering place, a film, Raging Water, and a panel discussion about flood concerns. January 20th, we have our Unity March at the Arlington Theater. So it's going to be a great weekend. Thank you all so much for being with us. And I look forward to seeing you all there and hearing the students recite. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.